Scotland Rugby's vice-captain, Helen Nelson, is one of the most crucial individuals in the squad. With 55 appearances for the national team to her name, she's been a vital cog as the team looks to progress and improve, striving for bigger goals each time. With the latest edition of the Women's Six Nations soon to get underway, with Scotland playing Wales on March the 23rd, it's another opportunity to put that progress to the test. In this episode of Sportspiel, we look ahead to the upcoming Six Nations with Helen, who plays her club rugby with Loughborough Lightning, as well as talking about the journey this Scotland team has been on. But there's also a chance to look at Helen's own journey, from first trying out rugby at the age of six, to becoming a member of the Scottish Alpine Ski Team, as well as returning to rugby at university after being turned down for football. As so happened, that university experience helped set her up on the path she's currently on, and now it's just as much about inspiring the next generation in rugby as it is trying to improve in the here and now. We also have time to talk about the importance of women's sport, the growth in women's rugby, and why it's so important for others to see it. After all, seeing it is believing it. Helen, a very warm welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to have a chat with us on the show. How is everything with you at the moment?
Yeah, good. Starting a busy period at the moment. Obviously still playing club rugby with Loughborough Lightning, and then our prep with Scotland now for Six Nations is just about to start. So gearing up for Six Nations, which is a really exciting time.
For sure. And I say for context for people listening, we're recording this, 5 days after Scotland's training camp squad was announced. I think it's 5 days anyway, if I'm counting right, for the Six Nations, which start Scotland's first games on the 23rd of March. So not long until that gets going. But how do you find this period? Do you kind of feel that excitement, the busyness, I suppose, as well, but like feeling like things are really ramping up before the tournament gets going?
Yeah, definitely. So tomorrow's the first day we're back in with everyone, and it's kind of like definitely a bit nervous to get back into it. But as soon as it's like nice to see everyone catch up and then just start getting kind of into the nitty gritty. It's I think we've got three camps before we're into like an international match week. So time is pretty short. So you have to really make use of every session you've got together. An exciting time, but definitely it's going to be a busy time. And I think we're going back at the weekend as well to play for clubs, so it's kind of going between the two environments that can be quite mentally challenging as well. Obviously like change of calls and systems and that sort of stuff, so yeah, it's full on.
How is that to kind of juggle between the two? Because I mean, if you liken it to anyone having a busy period at work or whatever and kind of trying to remember to live your life at the same time when you are kind of hopping between two different worlds at the same time, how is that to juggle?
Yeah, like it is a challenge. I definitely enjoy it. I think you can then, like, there's benefits of like both environments, and it's nice seeing different people and that sort of stuff. I think you just have to make sure before a session, or say when I'm getting the train back down after this camp, and then I know I'm back in with Lightning on Thursday, I'll just make sure I take a couple of hours to go through, like watch all of their sessions, go through all of our calls and that sort of stuff again to make sure that when I come back in on the Thursday, I know what I'm talking about, and I'm not then, like, you're going to have little mistakes here and there where I probably say a Scotland call and everyone kind of looks at you, but that's just the nature of the beast. But I think just making sure you do your prep before you head back into either environment so that you're a little bit more up to speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I was reading as well for this training camp anyway, seven uncapped players as well. So is it quite nice to kind of see that new blood come in, and does it like help refresh things each time?
Definitely, yeah. Because I've obviously been involved for a while now, and it's always been kind of like the same core group of players. And now I think, yeah, it's so exciting getting that kind of fresh blood in, whether it's through younger players through the Celtic Challenge getting identified and coming up, or experienced players like the likes of Meg Varley kind of coming in through that Scottish qualified system. So I think just having experience, like different people, new blood, is only going to make the programme better. So yeah, excited to meet everyone tomorrow and get them involved.
Yeah. And in terms of the tournament itself, like I say, not long until it gets started, but how do you kind of look ahead at it? Do you go in with as a group? Are there targets? Are there aims? Or is it kind of a see what comes, take every day as it comes situation?
Yeah, I think we definitely will have a discussion probably over the next few weeks and set ourselves targets. I think coming off the back of WXV, we were very adamant or clear as a group going into WXV2 that we wanted to win that. And I think that was actually a really good goal for us to have that. Obviously, you then have to like concentrate on individual games and that sort of stuff, but we always knew that we were capable of winning it, and we talked about that and set that as a goal. So I think it's probably something that we've realized is good for us as a group, is kind of goal setting. So I imagine we will do that. It hasn't happened yet, so I can't say what that's going to be, but I think, yeah, it's definitely a really useful tool for us.
I don't know if then it's that one of the changes that you've kind of seen and over the years that you've been involved with the squad, that kind of not, I suppose, bringing the cold setting in, but that like maturing of the group as well and kind of setting those lofty ambitions for you or going for big things.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's probably a confidence thing and realizing, yeah, but that we are capable of doing great things. And yeah, I think not just being kind of, yeah, we are improving as a programmer. I get that's part of it. Like, we're not now just happy kind of being in competitions. Like, we want to go out, we want to win things, we want to consistently win games. So I think maturing as a group, like you say, is probably a big part of that.
Individually as well, did that kind of come in as a personal mindset for you too? That obviously with your own on-pitch performances, training behind the scenes as well, that you've got that drive to want to be better. And I don't know if that's kind of come through the national setup, but club setup too.
Definitely, yeah. I think, yeah, like goal setting individually is a big part of that as well. You want to see clear improvements, and I think getting consistent game time as well for both for club week on week at a high standard really helps with that. You can try and like consistently improve on things and then implement that with international as well. So I think now there's the margin between like international games and club games like is getting smaller and smaller. Like it's a really high standard, so I think it's a really good thing to do then, like week on week, and then and take that into a competition like Six Nations.
Are you quite a driven person then? I don't know. That's kind of that mentality switch could, I suppose, for a lot of people be quite difficult, or take a bit of time to get used to. But I don't know if that's something that's come quite naturally to you, and whether that, that inner drive to be better.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's something I've always had. Like, I'm a very competitive person. I always have been, playing sport as a kid. So I think, yeah, probably quite self-critical. I think that comes with being a sports person. You have to kind of hold yourself to high standards and always try and drive to be better. So yeah, I'd say it probably does come naturally, but then also just being the environments that I'm in now, like you have to be your best all the time. Well, not all the time, but you have to strive to be your best and strive to improve. Otherwise, like you wouldn't get picked or wouldn't be getting the game time that you want. So, yeah.
Is there a way, kind of with that in mind, to summarize like the progress Scotland have been on over the last few years? Like I mentioned before, loftier targets and things, but it does feel like there's been great progression, with that kind of potential in the future very much in mind too.
Yeah, definitely. I think just the more like strength and depth we have now, like this competition now across the board, every single position, like people can't just, I don't think people weren't driven before, but now like I think they'll be battling for like starting jerseys in Six Nations, which is exactly how we want it. Like, it's the only way we're going to improve as a group is if there is that kind of internal competitions, but like healthy competition. Like, I think it's we're in a really good place with it, definitely driving each other on.
What do you see as the potential for the future going forwards? Like where can the group go? I suppose if you're looking like 5 years down the line or something.
I think like we can be consistently competing for that, like those top three spots in Six Nations. You know, I think it's more, I think we need to be consistent. So I think sometimes we're very good in some games and then like it can slip off. And I think it's about just building consistency. And probably as well, one thing we spoke about a lot at WXV was having that pressure on us. I think we've always been the underdogs. And now that we've started to win games, we're then coming into games as favourites. That's a whole other challenge in itself. So I think that kind of adds on to that layer of like maturity that we're talking about as a group. It's like another string to our bow, I guess, that we're building on. So I think, yeah, we want to be a team now that's isn't coming in as an underdog. So we're coming in as people kind of fear us and we're capable of winning games.
I suppose putting that internal pressure on yourselves to reach those targets as well, and it's easier said than done a lot of the time. So is there a way to kind of describe that mental challenge and how you're kind of approaching that going forwards, as like I say, not seeing yourselves as underdogs, but seeing yourselves as very much in the mix now?
Yeah, I think we kind of so we'll, for the Six Nations we'll set probably like an overall target of what we see ourselves achieving or whatever, but we'll then also do that week to week. We quite like having like a mindset anchor at the start of every week and being like, right, this is what we're going after, and it just means that everyone's on the same page with that. I think that it really helps us focus. And we know exactly what, like every session at the start of it, we can be like, right, remember, this is what we're going after. So that I think definitely helps. And as much as you're thinking about the result of the game on the Saturday, you need to be focusing on yourselves as a group and not getting caught up in, oh, we want to win. And you can't just focus on we want to win. It has to be our own performance. So focusing on us, and that's something we bring it back to a lot, is just we control what we can, and that's all you can do,
And it's something that, obviously, talking to athletes comes up quite
really.
regularly. Like, and I suppose in society in general, it's really hard not to compare yourself to something else, be it social media or whatever. And I don't know, that's like one of the, I don't know, not so much a battle, but like the things that you kind of wrestle with in your mind, not to try and compare yourself, but really like focus on yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Because we are like as a rugby team, we're probably smaller than other ones. Like when we play against the likes of your New Zealand's, Australia's, they've got much bigger packs, for instance. So we need to you can't just take like a mold of one team and then be like, we want to play like them. You have to very much cater to the look at the strengths that you have across the board in your team and then personalize that to your team. So I think that's a big one as well. And also not just taking stuff from the men's game and being like, oh, we want to do that, because we are women, or like everything is different. The game's the same, but like there's a lot of differences as well, obviously, like physically. So I think you have to very much, yeah, like focus in on us and concentrate on us.
And it's one of those that I often see like brought up in various different sports, I suppose. And when we talk about the Women's Six Nations and obviously trying to grow it and see it fulfill its potential and what it can possibly be, and there've also been a lot of great strides in that sense. I think about like Guinness becoming the title sponsor for this year, so sponsoring both the men's and the women's now. But I suppose is that one of the important things as well, what you just said there, to remember that like women's rugby is not a carbon copy of men's rugby. It's its own thing, and to kind of remember that its own thing too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you remember that when, or you're reminded of that when people come and watch, say they're like, they've only ever watched men's rugby, and then they come to a women's game and they're like, wow, like they love it. Because it is different. It's probably maybe a little bit looser in some aspects, or there's tries scored that wouldn't be scored in the men's games for whatever reason. It is the same game, but I think it's different and more exciting in certain aspects as well. So I think that's quite refreshing when you hear that. Like quite a lot of people are converted over to the women's game and now absolutely love it. So it's definitely a really exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose your own role as well, vice captaincy and kind of that leadership side of it as well. And do you kind of take that leadership side? And is there a way to describe kind of how much you've changed or grown as a leader over those years as well?
To be honest, I don't know. It's something that I think the position that I play, it's quite natural. Like we've got a leadership group or like an attacking group at Scotland, and we try and drive that as players because ultimately we're the people on the pitch. So I think it's something like, yes, I'm like named vice captain, but it's very much, there's a lot of kind of natural leaders within the team. So it doesn't feel, I always joke and say it doesn't actually feel like I do much. I think that's just kind of a strength of our team, is that because it is easy, because there's so many of us that kind of like help and drive standards, and it's an absolute pleasure to do, but I think it's made easier by great teammates.
Yeah, like say the support around you, and I don't know if you almost like take on that core leadership group, if you like, almost the responsibility that, I suppose, when you think about it and helping to progress rugby in Scotland, women's rugby in Scotland, I suppose when you look at it, it's a big responsibility to have, but something that I imagine is a challenge that you all relish.
Definitely, yeah. And I think the support we're getting now, like from people that come to watch the games, you know, like now when we absolutely love it, when we play at Hive Stadium, you come out, there's the tunnel that leads to the changing rooms, we go back, and we're honestly out there for probably like an hour after the games, just like taking photos and signing stuff. And I think seeing that is incredible. Like women's rugby in Scotland has just gone like up and up and up, and you can genuinely see that like we are inspiring people to play, and I think that's what it's all about ultimately. So it's in a really exciting place.
Yeah, and I always think nice not to lose that as well going forward. So I know people always want to have like great ambitions, but I just love that personability, if you like, of women's sport and having that real connection with fans. I just think it gives people so much more in terms of that like feedback from players and things. Kind of rewinding the clock back on your own career, just to kind of get a sense of you, the person, and obviously where your career has taken you, and kind of from doing the research and first played rugby age 6 at grassroots level, and then a few years later down the line go on to compete for the Scottish Alpine ski team, and then it was kind of being turned down for football at Edinburgh University that kind of put you back in the rugby direction. After all that, like, can you describe how you, I suppose, rediscovered that love for rugby after, I suppose, going away from it a little bit?
Yeah. So I think I'd always loved the game as a youngster. It was a big part of, like, my auntie played, my granddad had always played, my brother played. So I think it was always very much like there at the roots. But and then when I stopped playing as a teenager or whatever, like, still loved watching, always watched Six Nations. So I think it was always there a little bit, but I didn't, yeah, when I went to university, it definitely wasn't at the forefront of my mind at all. And yeah, just went along. I think I'd seen posters about it, so I went along to this, to like a Monday night session, and was just hooked again from that first session. I think one thing about rugby is how inclusive it is and welcoming. I wandered along, ended up like meeting someone, a girl who was also walking along, and she's now one of my best friends. We lived together for about 3 or 4 years. So I think it's those kind of connections, definitely, I love about rugby. And I just, it brings me so much joy just playing it, just throwing a ball around and getting to kind of be physical and put shots in and stuff. I just, that was it from there. And I then joined the uni team and then joined Murrayfield Wanderers as well. So I was playing twice a week, training probably 5-6 times a week, and just thrown in. So yeah, love was definitely rekindled.
And to me, always sums up like university sport in this instance, but just how important like those connections with just people are in university sport. And I don't know if that is appreciated enough, just regardless of whether you go on to be an elite sports person or whatever, but just to help shape you as a person. And I imagine that was kind of similar in your case as well, that you just have that's the bare bones of the love for it, if you like, it's just those connections with people.
Definitely. I think it's you're quite a vulnerable time, you know, moving away from home. Like for me, Edinburgh was a big city back then. And I think you're kind of looking to, you want to meet new people, you want to meet friends and go along to a rugby team. You've instantly got 15, 20 pals who want to hang out with you and make an effort and you have fun. So yeah, I think like Edinburgh Uni was so good for me in terms of rugby, but also just, yeah, like you say, developing me as a person. And I'm very, very grateful to that, to the team and to the club. I think it's a great thing, and it's Edinburgh Uni's developed so many Scottish women's rugby players now, like the alumni and alumni in the team, but also the current players coming through as well. It really is an incredible pathway. So yeah, very grateful to that.
Is there something about Edinburgh specifically that you think, like, what is it that kind of the ingredients, if you like, that can help produce or at least start those players on that pathway?
I think so. Claire Cruikshank, the head coach, she's been the head coach now since I was there a few years before as well. She's very passionate, like makes an effort to recruit people and puts time into people to get them along. But I think the fact that it's, for me, it very much introduced me to kind of performance sport. We were in the performance gym a couple of times a week. We had access to physios. We did analysis. So that was all like really good for me in terms of preparing me to go into the Scotland environment from a performance point of view. But also they play against, so now they're in the Bucks Super League, so they play against teams from England, teams from Wales. So I think just having that exposure to people out with Scottish rugby, you're playing against a bigger pool of people, I guess, throughout the UK. So it's a very high standard. And yeah, I think it's to be able to play rugby at that level at university, I think it's great.
Was sport something that I know you wanted to go down or follow that path, or is that kind of that experience at uni was originally what gave you that as, yeah, this could be the future for me?
Yeah, I think like sport has always been a massive part of my life. I've always just loved it. I had a lot of fun doing it. It's a, like I say, a good way to like meet people, have fun, and just kind of properly throw yourself into that. So I think I would always have played sport, but I think at uni it's literally there if you want to play. Like there's so many different sports, different things you can try, different teams. So I think, yeah, I was always gonna get into something. It's just I wasn't sure what that was gonna be.
And yeah, I'm in a similar position. And I suppose I love Edinburgh as a place anyway. I went to university in Dundee, so
Okay.
close-ish.
Yeah.
But I always look at that part of my life as just something that's really like built me and kind of instilled confidence in me going forward. And I'm not sure if that's a similar thing for you, whether you can you describe like how that period of your life changed you from what you were before?
Yeah, definitely. I think I definitely grew as a person. I think whether that was through the rugby or if it was through like, yeah, studying and going to uni and meeting different people, I think you come in, I came in quite naive. I hadn't really spent much time in big cities. Inverness was kind of like the big city to me growing up, coming from the Highlands. So coming to Edinburgh, it was definitely very daunting. But no, absolutely loved it. Like you say, Edinburgh's a great city. It's beautiful, but also there's a lot going on, there's a lot happening. So yeah, it was a very, very special time in my life for sure. I like look back on it very fondly.
And you mentioned your aunt there, Claire Hock, because she played rugby for and was part of the first Ireland women's team, if memory serves me right from my research. And I say rugby has always been kind of there in your life, whether it's love or whatever. And then I think your parents were ski instructors, and that's where the skiing came into it as well. But kind of going through that period in your life and picking sports and experimenting with sports before eventually landing on rugby. I mean, what was it about those particular sports that kind of made you want to try those first before you ended up going down the rugby route?
Skiing, I didn't really have a choice, to be honest. My parents were, I think I was on skis by the age of about two. And like coming from Glencoe, there's a ski centre literally 20 minutes down the road. So that was very much in our blood. It was, we're out in the hills every weekend doing that. And yeah, just loved it. I think I kind of, because I'd done it from such a young age, like we were quite good. We went to ski, there was like a ski club up at Nevis Range. So we were like, just had fun again, just with friends buzzing about on the slopes. And then was lucky enough to kind of win a bursary, kind of a scholarship to spend some time in France for a few winters. And then it just really took off from there. But I think obviously with the skiing, it was like the racing element. So again, it's like that competitive element. I think that's probably at the core of everything, as I do love competition and working at something, putting the hours in, and like it's absolutely not an easy sport. And I think I love that. From being out in the cold and in the elements and being in the hills, you got to go to some beautiful places, and yeah, some very cool experiences. Sure.
That part there, you just said, like that I love competition part, as I don't, like we touched upon you as a person before, but I suppose that like that key driver, if you like, for who you are, that even if it wasn't rugby, it was another sport, like you still would have really adored that competition side of it, regardless of what journey you went down.
Definitely. I think, yeah, don't know what it is. I just love being, either whether it's part of a team or, well, to be honest, I think that's something that I kind of, I have learned over the years as well, is obviously when I was skiing, that was an individual sport. And you're still part of a team, you travel as a team, you train as a team. But then when it comes to the race at the weekend, you're on your own, you're competing on your own. And then moving into rugby, obviously team sport, I definitely think I love that element of being part of a team and fighting for your teammates. So I think that's something I've learned about myself, is that that's something I appreciate a lot.
Yeah, that having those people bounce off of. And I don't know if it makes you think like those special moments mean a lot more because you can share it with people as well.
Yeah, and I think you're there. We've been through a lot of highs and a lot of lows with Scotland, and you're there to support each other through those lows. And then it kind of makes that celebrating those highs even better. Yeah, like some of the moments in a winning changing room after a game is like Scottish music is absolutely blaring. We're all dancing, we have a good time. They're really special moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking back on your career with Scotland or whoever at the moment, do you kind of, what are those special highlights that you have for yourself right now?
I'd say Scotland wise, that first win we got, I think it was actually, I got a Facebook reminder, and I think it was 7 years ago today. It might not be true, but we won against Wales at Broadwood Stadium. It was our first Six Nations win, or our first win in years and years and years. That was incredible. Like, I think it was just kind of getting that monkey off the back, like a bit of realisation, like we can win games. We'd been talking about it for a long time, but to actually do it and get that result was huge for us. And that's, I think that season kind of then got the ball rolling. We then won a game, I think we won against Italy that same year, won against Ireland away the year after, and then obviously like gone on to qualify for the World Cup and things like that. So, and it's, there's really quite this, the same big like core group of us from that first win through to now. So I think that's, that will always be a very special game for sure.
Yeah. I can't remember who I was talking to and who said it now, which is quite annoying, but like it was looking at those particular, like those moments, whether it's wins or winning medals in other sports, for example, and those moments ultimately last for a few minutes, a half an hour, but it's the journey that is the part you really enjoy. And I suppose it's similar for you, that because it's been that core group for so long of it, that you almost look back on the journey just as much as you do those individual moments too.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, you remember the hours of graft and hard training sessions and wet and windy nights at Murrayfield, and I guess the disappointment as well. The week before, we'd should have won against Ireland, but a couple of we basically conceded a try in like one of the last plays, stuff like that. Like you, that hits really, really hard. So then bounce back and get the win the week after was really cool. And I remember as well, so our head coach at the time, Shade, he'd said to us, he was like, so like, you're going to win this weekend, but you need to have a song. What song will you sing when you win? And we were like, didn't really know what he was talking about. But anyway, we'd spent a few days being like, bouncing ideas and like, right, we'll sing this one on Saturday after we win, and kind of almost manifested it. And that's something that we've now taken forward, is like music is now a huge part of us as a team at Scotland. Like we are very passionate about our Scottish music and having a sing-along together.
As it should be, like, yeah. I think, again, conversation is last week about sometimes it can be really, if you're in it, like sport is ultimately fun and entertaining for fans, and we all got onto sport in one way or another because of that love for it. And it can be hard when you're striving for things to only look at it in a serious way. And is that part of that, you know, having that music, having that, those relationships with people within that group keeps that fun, even though like, you're obviously very serious about what you want to go do and the goals that you want to go and achieve.
Yeah. I think for me, if I didn't enjoy it and didn't enjoy the journey, then I wouldn't be doing it. I think there's too many things to go, like the graft you have to put in. Like if you weren't having fun day to day, and enjoying who you're with and enjoying the journey you're on, then I think you'd be doing it for the wrong reasons. I think it's very important that you are there together. You don't need to be best friends with everyone, but I think it's really important to have a strong culture and a culture that everyone's comfortable in and feels they can be themselves to ultimately thrive there.
55, I think it is, appearances for Scotland for you so far. Can you kind of compare like the person who made that very first appearance to the person that you are now, and how different are they?
It's a very good question. I think I'm probably just more confident in who I am as a person, but as a player as well. I think that first cap, couldn't really believe it was happening. Yeah, you're just kind of in this like whirlwind, and you almost feel like it's luck that you've got there. It's 55 caps later, I guess. Yeah, I'm more comfortable, yeah, and more confident in who I am, for sure.
It's almost that self-belief in yourself. Like say that first time, you almost have to like convince yourself like you're here on merit. It's not just a fluke type thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what it is. You kind of have that imposter syndrome, like, is this actually happening? Whereas still get that to a certain extent at times, but don't know. It's a funny one. It's a good question, to be fair, but yeah.
Well, this is to chuck in another one that I regularly ask, because it ends up being a little bit deep. It's just kind of summarize, you mentioned earlier about like sports always being a key part of your life, but can you kind of summarize like how important it is to you, like what it is about it that's kind of given you these tools for life and ultimately made you into the person that you are now? We're here with 55 caps for Scotland.
Yeah, I think a big part of it for me, I guess, is that sense of belonging. Like I love being part of that team and that family that I know will support me, and I support them day to day and through the highs and the lows, like be there for each other. I think I love working hard for something. I don't want to do something that's easy. I want to push myself physically, like mentally, tactically. I want to be as best I can. So I think, yeah, that hard work and that graft is a big part of it as well. And then I think just the kind of experiences, the traveling you get to do, I think sport is incredible in that sense. Like it's taken me all over the world. I wouldn't have traveled to some of the places that I have if I wasn't doing what I do. So I'd say those three.
Yeah. And I say we're biased on this show after all, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it, but sport can give you so much beyond just playing it. Like say belonging, people and those amazing experiences. I was going to touch on women's sport a little bit more generally as well. And obviously there's so many great stories at the moment, and to see its positive trajectory at the moment as well. Obviously still a long way to go, and still a sense that it's at the beginnings of like fully realizing its potential. And rugby, we talked about Six Nations growth already, feels like a big part of that. And we've so often said on this show about, you know, you can't be it unless you see it, various iterations of that phrase. And I suppose for you, I was going to ask to start off with, like, who were your inspirations, or if you had role models when you were younger? And if not, kind of, if you were growing up now and seeing like Six Nations on TV, for example, Women's Six Nations, can you kind of think about what that would have done for you at that age if you were seeing it then?
Yeah, I think in terms of sport, like, I watched a lot of men's rugby, didn't watch any women's rugby when I was young. So I think always had male like rugby player heroes that I looked up to. In terms of women's, I remember like Jess Ennis being like absolutely loving watching the 2012 Olympics. But I would say there was definitely a big hole. Like, I didn't really, there weren't any kind of like strong female athletes that I looked at and was like, I want to be like that. And I'd say that would have been really big for me, because I think I probably struggled body image wise looking like, or just like being sporty. And I remember always thinking I had really like muscly arms and kind of hating it and like looking different to people in my PE class and people in my year at school, but not necessarily seeing that as a positive thing. Whereas now I would like to think that me personally and my teammates around me, we very much promote like women being proud of their bodies and being strong and looking different. And I hope that younger girls see that and think that it's cool to be strong and have muscly arms.
And on that, I remember talking to Millie Tanner, a British cyclist, about this as well. And she kind of summarized it. It's almost like if she's posting a picture on Instagram, for example, and so it's like that little nagging voice in the back of your head of, do I look too musty today? But then your rational brain kicks in, well, of course, that's what I'm aiming for. That's part of it. And how is that now, like, say, shouting about celebrating body image and people's bodies for doing the job that it does, because that's what you're after. But I don't know whether that social media pressure, it still feels like there's some way to go on normalizing a lot of that.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, because I'm probably in such like a rugby bubble now where I wouldn't think twice about someone. Like, we all want to be as strong as we can, and we're all incredibly proud of being strong and looking strong. So I probably have a false sense of security in that. And I maybe forget sometimes that some people maybe still like struggle with that, like day to day, it's not as normal in their environments. So I think we are in quite like an important, we play an important role that we do need to keep celebrating it and pushing that it is, that women should celebrate having strong bodies. Like, yeah, definitely.
Kind of looking back on that, like the young or you growing up in that period in your life, I mean, how much did that affect you, and like what still kept like you wanting more, I suppose, not to, I don't know, almost like to actually like keep being sporty and keep driving for what you really wanted ultimately?
Yeah, I think it affected me. I obviously came from quite a small place, and I had a couple of like friends who were sporty, but I was very much, when I was playing rugby, I was always the only girl. And I remember kind of being embarrassed or ashamed by that a little bit, and like, I guess, confused why it was different or why I was the only one. And I think, yeah, like, I don't know. I think that probably did affect my confidence a bit. I think I was very lucky in the sense maybe I didn't have as like many friends who were girls that were playing sport, but my family were always very encouraging and always kind of, my parents wanted me to, like, they supported me. Like, if I wanted to play sport, like, they would, from the logistical side, like, they would drive me wherever I needed to go and financially help me with skiing and that sort of stuff. So very, very lucky that I was supported from my family. But I think, yeah, having female role models that I could have looked up to, I think that would have made a big difference for sure.
Yeah, like you said, that almost like that hole, if you like, you know, it's great to have all these male role models, but it feels like something's missing.
Yeah.
Does it feel like it's something that, from your perspective, like we're addressing a little bit? You know, we're obviously shouting about a lot of great women's sports teams now and women's athletes, but I mean, the disparity is obviously still there by and large.
Yeah, I'd say it definitely is improving. I do still think it can be better. From a exposure point of view, like games getting streamed, all that sort of stuff, even just publicity in terms of like social media, what goes out and how much goes out, I still think it can be definitely better, because I think there is appetite there for, you watch sort of like football, some football teams down south now are selling out massive stadiums. I think the appetite is there for people to go and watch games, but I think the advertising of it can always be better and always be pushed more.
Yeah. And I suppose even like I always pick up, say, like domestic leagues and things. And even if I look back, I think what happened with the Women's Premiership, and obviously there's the financial things and trying to get as financially secure as possible. And I don't know if you kind of pick that out as like one of the big next steps. That exposure will obviously help in the long run. And is that one of the key things that I suppose certain sport we need to address, if you like, to really get it on a solid footing? I said realize its potential quite a lot, but we can all see it's there. It's just kind of letting it bloom as best as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I think getting more games streamed and that sort of thing will only help with that. I think women's rugby, as an example, sometimes games are streamed, but it's on like a link, and I'm like on the way to a bus to a game, and my family are like, we can't find the link. And it's like having to jump through all these hoops to be able to watch women's sport. Whereas a guy's, you can turn on the TV and there might be like a national, like three game on football. Do you know what I mean? Like it's so much easier to watch men's sport sometimes, whereas you have to be really dedicated and be able to jump through the hoops to watch women's sport. So I think that's a big thing that can change.
Yeah, like the coverage as a whole, I think, and just giving it a lot more, and like I say, just ease of access a lot of the time, and having that come about. Where do you kind of see women's rugby, I suppose, specifically, and also maybe specifically in Scotland as well, going in the future? Like we talked about its potential, but can you kind of envisage a future, if you like, that is positive if we get everything right?
Definitely. I think having the Women's World Cup in 25 in England is going to be huge. I think if you look at the audiences that are going to women's PWR games now on a weekly basis, people are breaking those kind of crowd records week on week. So I think that's a very, very exciting, 25 will be a very exciting year. And then in terms of Scottish women's rugby, I think off the back of the Celtic Challenge this year, it's been a big success. I think tying in with Edinburgh and Glasgow and those professional sides, I think they've been great. Like Edinburgh's social media with the girls has been so good, just kind of linking in with the men's and making it have that one club feel. I think they've really got the nail on the head. So I think those two teams and the Celtic Challenge, I think it's just going to go from strength to strength. So it's really exciting for Scottish women's rugby as well.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And I suppose, is there anything else that we've talked on the coverage thing, but anything else you'd really like to see coming in that can help the sport keep going forwards?
I think just more investment. Obviously, we've got, I think it's 28 professional contracts in Scotland. But I think the more professional and the more kind of investment that goes into the game, whether that's in Scotland or kind of like UK as a whole and world rugby as well, more kind of into the global competitions. I think it will just go from strength to strength. I think clubs as well, if they're moving more professional and more investment in those, then yeah, it will just keep pushing forwards.
Yeah, definitely. And you spoke a little bit earlier about kind of the role that you play and the role your teammates are playing and kind of helping to push that and to the forefront. And obviously with a lot of the time with greater success comes a lot more eyeballs. Do you kind of see yourself as a role model? I know it's a little bit weird to kind of think yourself in that position, but like there is that role model aspect now to you that you are essentially paving the way now for another generation going forwards, because that's another big responsibility to take on.
Yeah, I guess so. I definitely wouldn't think of myself as a role model, but I think hopefully again it means like nothing too much has to change. Like I hope I can just keep kind of holding myself to kind of high standards and going about my day to day as I would. And I think just being a good person, like if someone like stops and asks for a photo or whatever, like we were at Murrayfield yesterday watching the men's game and there was like quite a few times where a couple of us got stopped to get photos and stuff. And I think just taking the time to like chat to the girls and kind of be interested in people, I think that's all you can really do, is keep kind of trying to be your authentic self, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine the atmosphere yesterday at Murrayfield was probably pretty good.
Yeah, it was it was very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. My final question for you as well, obviously kind of going into the camp side of things now before the tournament gets underway, what happens in the short term within that, if you can kind of describe to people what's going on between now and first, I suppose, getting the tournament properly underway?
Yeah, so we'll be, for the next few weeks, we're in a Monday to a Wednesday. So Mondays are kind of just like reconnecting, and we have a couple of meetings in the mornings. And then I think we've got a bit of a skills session, just a bit of a sharpener, probably do hopefully just lots of kicking. That would be my perfect session. And then more meetings in the afternoon, and then Tuesday, Wednesday are a bit more full on. I think we've got a couple of team sessions, maybe a bit of gym. And then so basically the same kind of next few Monday, Wednesdays, and then we're into a match week. So that Wales week will be again kind of Monday through to the Saturday. You start quite lightly, a lot of meetings on the Monday, and then kind of build up to your team run, and then a game on Saturday. So yeah, just trying to tick off, I guess, as much detail as you can in meetings. And then I think our coach told us how many training sessions it is together, and it's really not that many before the Wales game. So it's trying to make the most of those.
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, being in the best position, as best prepared as you can be for when it gets underway. But I hope, I say, this is another successful tournament. I hope, like say, when it does come to talking about goals and achievements and things like that, that those will eventually obviously be realised going forwards. So thank you so much, Helen, for coming onto the show. Obviously, despite my accent, of course, my allegiance is lie with Scotland. Thanks to my mum. Otherwise, she'd probably disown me if I didn't. But I do hope everything pans out really, really well for you, and also for the rest of the year. And I know we talk about women's sport quite regularly on this show, but anything that can help bring it forwards, grow it, I think is just better for society, people, helping have people have those inspirations out there as well. So here's hoping that it does continue on the positive trajectory that it does seem to have been for quite some time. So thanks so much for coming onto the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Cheers.
A huge thank you to Helen for taking the time to chat with us on this episode of the podcast, and also to the Athlete Media Group for the help organising this interview. We wish Helen and Scotland the best of luck during the Six Nations. That's almost it for this episode, everyone. If you enjoyed what you heard, then please give us a follow on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and all of our handles are at SportSpielPod. Of course, if you are into your rugby, don't forget that our previous episode was with England prospect Lily Ives-Campion. You can catch that, if you haven't already, on our website or the podcast platform of your choice. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll be back next week with another new episode. Until then, take care.